wait, that's not the right music. In September of this year, on the Tux Radar podcast, which was the corresponding podcast to the Linux Format magazine, a few of the hosts announced at the end of the show their departure from Linux Format. This was sadly the end of the Tux Radar podcast as well. However, much to my relief, a new podcast and crowdfunding campaign was launched. The campaign, which you can contribute to through Indiegogo, is for a new magazine called Linux Voice, and the new podcast, which is currently underway, you can find at linuxvoice.com. And tonight, I have with me one of the founders and contributors of Linux Voice, Ben Everard. Ben, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for coming. So, if you don't mind, can you give us a little bit of background as to what you did at Linux Format?
Sure. When I first started, I was the digital media editor, which is a fancy way of saying I created the DVD that came on the front of the magazine each month.
Yeah.
But then I became the technical editor, which meant that somebody else did the DVD and I did more of the writing and just sort of reading through everything to make sure it was all technically okay.
Ah, very good. And so what is your role within Linux Voice when you start to move over to that? Is it pretty much the same?
Yeah, pretty much. We'll have more sort of flexible roles. Initially, we'll probably have to do a lot of writing ourselves. So it'll be mostly doing that and working with the other guys. Obviously, it'll be sort of chief cook and bottle washer. Everything needs to be done. One of us will have to do.
All right. So as far as Linux Voice goes, the actual magazine, can you kind of describe to us what the difference is between Linux Voice and the other Linux magazines that might be on the market today?
Sure. Linux Voice, if you've read Linux Format before, the same sort of structure will carry through to Linux Voice. So it'll be a mix of tutorials, features, interviews, and some news. All of stuff that we think will be interesting to most average Linux users.
Yeah.
The biggest difference really between us and most of the other Linux magazines is we're trying to get the community involved and to support them as well. So it will not only be written by Linux users for Linux users, that will be the only people that matter. We won't have management and shareholders or whatever trying to dictate anything. It'll be purely down to us and the readers what goes into it.
All right. So as far as the giving back part to the community, of course, that's a big thing with Linux users. They love giving back to the community and stuff. And so in that process, is it how are you going to determine where that money goes back to?
There's going to be a few ways we're going to give back. Most publicly, we've pledged to give 50% of our profits to free software causes, whatever they may be, whether they're software projects that need money for hosting or whatever, whether it's bug bounties. We'll let the readers decide that. And the second thing is we'll be making all of our content available under a Creative Commons license 9 months after it's published. So that work will be there for other people to take, to build upon and to use however they like.
Oh, very good. So besides you, and I think there's Andrew Gregory and Mike Saunders as well. Is there anybody else that's actually going to be on the magazine so far?
Yeah, it's me, Mike, and Andrew at the moment. Some listeners may know Graham Morrison also left at the same time.
Right.
He's bound by a no-compete clause at the moment, so he can't join us. That'll be running out later on in December, and we're hoping he'll decide to join us then. Uh-huh. There's certainly the offer there for him, but he can't take it at the moment.
That would be great. So I know that, I mean, starting up a new project like this and a crowdfunding project and, you know, just going through the whole thing of just picking up and just dropping your job and starting a project like this has had to be kind of nerve-wracking. So what kind of challenges, besides the initial impact of it all, did you find starting a project?
It's a good question. I guess the biggest one, personally, has been it's incredibly stressful to do a crowdfunding campaign.
I can imagine.
Yeah, the first week particularly, we're all just glued to our computers pressing F5, just seeing how it came. You know, if there was an hour gap between funders, we'd be sweating, and we've got an IRC channel, and we'd be talking, what's going on? And it'd be really easy to underestimate how difficult that was for us. We're past the worst of it now, and we're sort of relaxed a little bit. The other challenges, we're quite a dispersed team, both in the UK and Mike's in Austria. So there's been the sort of communication and logistical challenges there, but nothing too serious.
Right.
Other than that, everything's gone worryingly straightforwardly, to be honest. I think we're still waiting to find out the biggest challenges, but I'm sure we're up to them.
Right. The content that will be free after a maximum of 9 months, is there going to be a digital subscription as well as a paper subscription?
Yeah, you can get digital subscriptions on the Indiegogo site as well. Yeah. Whichever you prefer.
All right. So, and that's going to be straight through the Linux Voice website as far as, right now it's through the Indiegogo site, but is there going to be any like Google Play or any other type of format that way as far as submitting getting the subscriptions, or is it just going to be like a PDF download?
To start with, it will be a PDF download from our website. We will be looking into other formats. I know people have been asking for EPUB and Mobi, and I don't think we'll have too many issues getting those out.
Right.
In the longer term, we do want to get into iTunes and Google Play, but they won't even talk to us until we've got a magazine on the shelf.
Yeah.
So I don't think it'll be a problem, but there might be a slight delay in getting onto those places.
So you're a pretty busy guy. Besides doing the podcast for Linux Voice, as well as working on getting the magazine up and running, you also wrote a book, Learning Python with Raspberry Pi. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can. Actually, I just sent in the manuscript yesterday. So even my editor doesn't know I've finished yet, because she doesn't check her emails over the weekend. But yeah, it's just completed.
Oh.
It's broadly speaking, it's an introduction into everything you can do with a Raspberry Pi using Python. So it's not a traditional learn to program using Python book that's just sort of thrown on the Raspberry Pi as a buzzword. It's very much about the sort of unique features of the Raspberry Pi. So we look at things like using the Raspberry Pi camera module, using the GPIOs, and sort of general things we think will be interesting to Raspberry Pi users. So there's sections on games, on using OpenGLES, and that sort of thing. It's a very wide-ranging book. It's covering almost everything you can do with the Raspberry Pi and Python. Almost everything.
So is there a specific place that you're aiming the book at? I mean, is the book aimed at a certain group of people, or is it just anybody that's interested type of thing?
I think I've always had in my mind the average reader is the sort of person who's interested in computers, doesn't have a background in programming, but they bought the Raspberry Pi because they think it's a cool project and they like the ideas, and they're sort of stuck for what to do with it. They like the idea, but they don't know exactly how to use it. And this sort of takes you by the hand. It doesn't require any programming knowledge to start with, although a little would probably be helpful. You'd certainly be able to follow the book if you hadn't programmed before.
Oh, well, that's good.
Other than that, anyone with a Raspberry Pi, I guess.
Right. So you've done a lot of work with the Raspberry Pi, obviously. So what do you find that's so appealing about the Raspberry Pi?
It's the form factor, I think, for me. I mean, I hear a lot of people talk about it, and, you know, it's, and almost describe it just like it's a regular computer but cheaper. But it's not. It's, for me, the sort of this power of it is the shape, the low power requirements, the access to things like the GPIO, so you can use it in a much wider range than you could a regular computer. You can embed it in stuff, whether that's the back of your TV as a media player, whether that's in the middle of a robot, you know, buzzing around the place. And the fact they're cheap enough just to mess around with is quite important. I mean, when you're sort of wiring up the back, GPIOs off the back, I've done that with regular computers, and there's always a slight thing, oh, you know, if I touch the wrong thing, I could trash my computer. Mm. With the Raspberry Pi, well, you know, it's 30 quid. I'll get over it. I'll buy a new one.
Right.
And it is that, and the low power as well, which means you can just power it off a couple of batteries. Or a solar panel or whatever. There's so many applications where that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I can imagine. So is there a particular reason why you chose Python to learn to, you know, learn Python with Raspberry Pi as opposed to a different language?
To be perfectly honest, the decision was made before I got on board. I got asked by the publishers if I wanted to write this book. I didn't decide on the book. However, having said that, Python probably would have been my choice anyway, purely because it's a nice medium of it's a powerful language. You can do so much with it, with, you know, with all the modules and everything. But at the same time, it's an easy language to learn and to pick up. And yeah, you could have done it in plenty of other languages, but Python just, it's hard to say exactly why. It just feels about right for a new programmer on the Raspberry Pi.
Good. All right. So in talking about just Linux in general, how long have you been using Linux itself?
It's quite an easy question to answer, actually. I started because I got, just before I went to uni, we got a sort of letter through telling us how to prepare for the course. And one of them was a suggestion that we started using Linux, or we got familiar with it. And that would have been June 2000. So I can give you the month. And that, and yeah, I was taking a computer and it needed everything reinstalling. So I thought, well, might as well just throw Linux on it rather than Windows, get familiar with it. And I've been using it as my main desktop ever since.
Wow. So is that what kind of brought you to open source and Linux, is that you just were handed something and said, go for it?
Yeah, I mean, I'd heard of open source before, but I'd never really had much to do with it. And I do remember a couple of years before, I got a Slackware CD. I think it came on the front of a magazine or something, but I never even got it to boot, to be honest. I spent about a day. but yeah, that was, I don't know why, it just sort of struck me as a good idea at the time. And then I started using Linux then.
All right. So what do you find that probably the most appealing aspect of Linux and open source software itself?
I think I'm a born tinkerer. I like sort of poking about inside of things, seeing how they work, and sort of making modifications, see what happens. And I think even if you're not a kernel programmer, the fact that everything's open from the kernel up, is it just makes me feel better using it. And the fact that, you know, it's all broken up, so you got different, you got X windows and you can use it or not, you got different window managers. That just all appeals to the tinkerer in me.
Right. I'm right there with you on that one. So, so is there something about Linux itself, everything that encompasses it, that you feel probably needs a little bit more polished or more concentrated on?
There's a lot of things that certainly could be polished and tidied up, but I think if it was all fixed, it wouldn't be Linux. and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, there's certain things that are tidied up. I mean, there's Chrome OS, there's Android, which take Linux as the base and tidy them up in a way that's right for a certain class of users. But the fact that it is all sort of cobbled together, for want of a better word, is part of what makes Linux Linux. If it was perfect, it would attract a different class of people, and the sort of tinkerers like myself would probably move on to something else.
All right. Yeah. So Is there something in that's happening right now within Linux and maybe even open source software or Floss or anything like that that you find real exciting and something that's happening right now?
For Linux in general, I think the most exciting thing is what Valve are doing with Steam. And I know it's not open source, but I think it will be a massive impact on the desktop, well, in the general state of the software in general. But personally, I'm not actually a gamer, so it doesn't really affect me. It's something I'm sitting back and watching.
Right.
The things that have really excited me recently, even though, well, they're not necessarily that new, is the more hackable hardware, the open hardware, things like the Arduino. I only got into the Arduino this year, really. And I'm loving it. It's so, just playing about with hardware and building up the little circuits. And the same with the GPIOs and the Raspberry Pi. And it's that, I think the cool word for it is physical computing. But that's what I'm enjoying at the moment.
Yeah, sounds good. I really need to learn more about the Raspberry Pi and the Arduino, really get into that a little bit more. I think it'd be a whole lot of fun. I could see myself spending a lot of hours doing that. So during your employment at Linux Format and writing for them, what was it that was probably the most exciting thing that you got to write about?
That's quite a good question. I think the thing that I think that I enjoyed the most was the hacking, where some people think we should call it cracking, the sort of malicious, well, not necessarily malicious, breaking into computing and sort of attacking servers. And we did some articles on that, sort of going through things like Metasploit, fairly straightforward stuff, but probing computers for weaknesses and looking at how to exploit those. And it was quite good fun just to set up a little test lab and see what we could do.
Yeah. That does sound like fun. So going from here into the future, where would you like to see open source go? What kind of ventures?
I think there's a few sort of big things. For me, open standards are almost as important and possibly more important than open software. And I'd really like to see open standards on things like Office software become much, much more prevalent. And if that means people using Microsoft Office but saving it in a format that's completely compatible with LibreOffice, then that's fine, provided that they use that open standard as the format. Particularly in public institutions, where it's our money that's being paid to lock it away in proprietary formats, that really annoys me.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I mean, just greater level of adoption, really. I mean, the open source, so Linux desktop is really my sort of area. That's what I enjoy using, and I'd love to see that become more popular. Hopefully the Steam box or Steam OS will help us get there.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat that you are. I'm not a gamer, but I think that having Steam come along is going to be a really good benefit, just to get some more people that's interested in the programming and the supporting of Linux and that kind of format.
Yeah, and just to have Valve behind it. I mean, obviously there's companies like IBM and Google already behind it, but it's just another massive company that's sort of backing Linux. It just sort of, it makes me think that this is definitely, it's not going to stop. It's the ball just sort of keeps picking up speed and rolling faster and faster.
Yeah, I agree. So is there anything else that you would like to tell us about the magazine, the campaign, podcast, your book?
Well, the magazine's going to be awesome. Check out linuxvoice.com, and there's links there to the Indiegogo campaign. We really need all the support we can get, because if we don't reach the goal, we won't make the magazine. It's as simple as that. This isn't plan A with plan B and plan C. This is just the only plan. And we'd really want, because we think the community would really benefit from having this sort of the magazine to support it. The community supports the magazine supports the community. It's sort of a natural reinforcing each other. and we think it's going to be great. The book should be out February, hopefully February. It might not be out till March. And if you're interested in the Raspberry Pi and Python, please check it out.
All right. So where can we find the book? Where can we order the book from?
At the moment, it's available from pre-order on Amazon. It's being published by Wiley, so they should have it in all good bookshops.
Very good. Very good. So what we need to do is go over to linuxvoice.com and click on the big button that says support our Indiegogo campaign, chip in some bucks, and get the goal reached. Right now, we got 22 days left at the time of this recording. And you're making a good progress, but there's still a little bit of area there that we need to fill up. So hopefully some of the listeners will jump on over and make a nice contribution to help the cause.
Hopefully,
yeah. Yeah. Ben, I greatly appreciate you taking the time out of your day to stop by and talk. And we'd love to have you.
Ah, thanks for having me here. It's been good fun.
Yeah. You have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
At time of recording in this show on December 1st, there were 22 days left of the Linux Voice crowdfunding campaign. And by the time that it does go public, there will probably only be maybe 10 to 11 days left of their campaign. So if you would please go over to their website, linuxvoice.com, click on the Support Our Indiegogo campaign, or you can go to indiegogo.com/projects/linux-voice. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.